This is your weekly rundown 57. Come on now, let's get it. Welcome back, everybody. This is your Anime Degens. I'm here with my co-host, Tyler. Unfortunately, we are missing Dan one more time, but he should be back soon, guys. Tyler, man, how you doing, man?
Hey, I spent like most of my day outside yesterday playing some cornhole and just, you know, hanging out with the fam, stuff like that, doing a little bit of eating, some barbecue off the grill, and I'm sore as shit today. Who knew throwing them bags would make a man sore like that?
Boy, if you don't go outside, what the hell? You sore from cornhole?
I played some basketball too.
Okay.
It was mostly cornhole.
Like all right, my shoulders
and upper back, like they're killing me today, you know?
Not your shoulder, bro.
Yeah, I mean,
we need to get you in the weight room or something. Get you some dumbbells, god damn.
I was actually gonna like start doing some home workout thing, cable machine thing or whatever, and I was gonna start doing that today. But damn,
a rowing machine? You mean?
No, it's like a cable total gym thing, you know?
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. Which I've played with it here and there, but I haven't really, like, full sent it yet. And I was aiming to start today, and I was like, no, I don't think so. I'm going to wait till tomorrow.
You know what I used to do is calisthenics while I watch TV.
That's just like push-ups, sit-ups. Oh.
It's usually your own body weight. Yeah, okay. That's all calisthenics
is. Is that what that's called? Yeah, I always thought that was like them band shit.
Nah. Calisthenics is like push-ups, pull-ups, shit like that.
If you want to be mashed, I'm gonna let you be mashed, bro.
That's how you get it in, bro. You sitting on the couch. You know, if you're sitting on the couch, you're not really doing anything. Might as well do a little something. You know.
I feel that.
But guys, back to the show, Tyler. Guys, the best way to support us: always rate the podcast, tell your friends about us, and if you want us to talk about any topics or you have specific questions about our latest episodes, hit us up in the Discord or on our socials, linktree.com/animedegens. So today, we have four shows, as always. But first, we have Undead Unluck, episode 21. Frieren, the Slayer, episode 25. Bashel, Magic and Muscles, season 2, episode 8. And One Piece, 1096. In my opinion, we had some gas episodes and we had a couple of duds in here, though, too. This week's a very mixed bag to me.
Huh. I wonder which one could be duds. I know I'm probably One Piece, but I'm trying to guess which one of the other one. Maybe Undead Unluck?
Wasn't a fan of this week, bro. Huh? Well, actually, no. We just had one dud. Sorry, I said a couple. We had one dud. We had one dud. It was One Piece. That was 90% just like recap.
But, you know, since it's not a filler, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about it at least. So we had some things come up in it, so.
Yeah, it's technically not a filler, so we have to sit here and pretend like there's something to talk about, guys. Yo. Ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's do this shit.
All right. So first, guys, we have Undead Unluck, episode 21, Memento Mori. So with Andy and Fuko too weak to take on UMA Autumn, Ano has taken them in for training. The first step is learning about Andy's past, and Ano has a creative way to do so. So this was really cool. Like, the whole idea is, like, they'll get stronger by learning more about each other. And what better way to do that than talk about the past? So to start the episode, Ano uses Artifact Soul Caliper to get Fuko into Andy's Book of the Past. So if you guys remember correctly, like, she used the UMA Autumn claw arm thing to turn him into a book. And since the book was like too big for them to open, or too heavy for them to open, she used an artifact. Did you see this coming, man?
No,
but where is she getting all these artifacts?
Yeah, you know, she can see the future, right? Somewhat, so, or right. Something like that. She can ride it. So maybe she has a easier time of figuring out where artifacts are, I guess. You know?
I don't know, man. Like, she's starting to become a little suspicious to me.
Yeah. I mean, we was wondering kind of how they was going to read Andy's past book or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I guess this makes sense. Basically, she made Fuko's soul come out of her body and just shoved it in the book, right?
That's pretty much it. Yeah. Fuko was as surprised as I was. because I just didn't expect her to have another what seems like super powerful artifact. And we still don't know for a fact if she's a negator, but I feel like she has to be. She has a lot going on here.
Yeah, and it's weird that artifact, the Soul Calibur thing, is it's in her body. It's where her heart should be, kind of, right? Is what it looks like.
So. Yeah, it was some Iron Man shit, bro.
But yeah, that's pretty interesting to see out of nowhere. So
right, and then on top of that, she said Fuko would learn why Andy was born. What do you think she meant by that? You think somebody planned him to be undead or something like that, or something just a little bit more?
So there's there's two ways that you could probably take this, why he was born as a person. Maybe he's destined to do something, right? And maybe she's going to find out what he was exactly destined to do. Mm-hmm. Or there's a second way that I think that they could be potentially talking about, and that is how Victor got sealed away and Andy became born. Kinda. Right?
Oh shit.
So.
Oh man. Yeah. No. I think you're right, actually. Because later in this little section, I will actually gonna get into. I guess the day Andy, quote unquote, was born.
Yeah.
So, good catch there. Good catch.
That's the only thing I know. Which it could be either one. This show's been keeping us on our toes about this type of shit for a while. So.
Yeah, and I think when we started this show, I think we all thought, Dan included, thought this was just going to be a dumb, fun show.
Yeah.
And it's just it's pretty deep and starting to get a little bit more complex. And we have a lot of questions now. I wasn't expecting all of this.
Yeah, some things don't make sense, though, but most things end up making sense after a minute. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. But yeah, getting to the actual memory... or Andy's past. So we started off the story back in the Midwest, I guess the West, really, in Longing. If you guys don't remember, that's the town where they found UMA spoil earlier in the season. So we're back there. Andy has a past there. And Fuko ends up getting saved by Andy, and they go back to the tavern. And we end up finding out this is after the Civil War in 1965. And I kind of put together when I was watching this that he has 1865 on his chest. So something happened to him to where somebody, or he did, he tattooed that on to himself or something. So something major happened. And I think what you just said about him being born has something to do with that. But what did you think about him not realizing he was even undead in this part of the memory?
I didn't expect it. I would assume that negators, you know, would have in this world would have been aware of their powers somewhat, but it seemed like no one was really aware of negation back then, which is kind of wild because we're 100 years back,
144. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's not that far. That's not that long ago, you know? So what changed to make everyone aware of the negators? So.
Well, I think it's more like, I think maybe still people don't know anything about negators. It's just like the people that are in the show know about negators.
Okay.
But I think before Andy was like found out, like he had no other way to be contacted other than to get hunted down. Because I figured it would be very rare for you to find another person that has negator abilities.
It's just wild that they basically said, like, we've been wondering why he heals so fast or whatever. Like, did that not, like, pique your interest, you know?
Right. No, what had me fucked up was they were like, yeah, Captain's injuries heals lickety-split, but he's mm-hmm. not undead.
Yeah, I mean,
what y'all talking about, bro?
Use your head. I mean, I know it's 150 years ago, but come on now.
Y'all know y'all not dumb. Like, what's going on here for real? He just got shot through the chest saving this girl and, like, and it's fine. Like, y'all are just going to, it's cool? Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get into the not so bright part of the story. And so Fuko ends up joining the crew because she, like, kind of convinces them that she knows Andy. She tells him about the tattoo on his chest and his arm. But to get into the crew, she has to play Russian roulette. And I thought it was a really cool moment because she just kept firing the gun after the first, and the firing the revolver after, like, the first one wasn't in the chamber. She just kept going. And the other people were like, are you crazy? She was like, there's no bullets in this gun. I know him. She was dead, right? It was pretty cool. So I thought that was a really cool moment. Even she felt comfortable enough with Andy that even, like, his former self 144 years ago, she was like, I still know this guy.
That's an awful lot of chances to be playing with when you're playing Russian roulette. So
yeah, I wouldn't do that personally, but it's cool that she feels so comfortable.
But never did I expect to see the game Russian Roulette come up in an anime. So I did not expect that.
Honestly, especially this one. Like, it just doesn't, like, we're doing like some cowboy shit. That's crazy. So, but as they're kind of like celebrating her joining the crew, some bandits that they were dealing with earlier come in and shoot up the whole crew. Fuko ends up getting saved by Miss John, I believe it is, or something like that.
Josh.
Miss Josh. Thank you, sir. And there was a couple of things I wanted to kind of get into here. So sometimes in shows, going into the past involves the butterfly effect, where you can't touch anything, you can't do anything, you can just observe because things stack up and it changes the future. Like, did you like this version of, I guess, being in the past versus that?
I mean,
because she's like part of the story now.
Yeah, I think that they meant to do it that way, because
for sure.
I think that her going into the past was part of the past. I guess you can say it was meant to happen to get to where they are at that time in the future, I believe. As I don't think with her going into the past, I don't think that he would have found out that he was undead. So fast. I mean,
but that, and that's what I'm confused about is, like, does this, like, create paradoxes? Like, what if she never, like, met him? Something has to happen first, right? Like, it doesn't, yeah, I mean, it creates a loop if she's, like, actually in his memories for real.
I mean, this is where, like, time shit gets weird, you know, because it obviously happened because this, I mean, it was obviously meant to happen in the current loop or whatever, because, you know, he found out about it. And then it makes sense, too, because she ends up telling him, you know, where they'll meet and, you know, he'll save her and stuff like that. So without that information, he wouldn't have never saved her, and Fuko would have died, right? So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, because like if he doesn't save her, they never, you know, like they never meet. But like if they had never met in the first, like it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like if they had never met in the first place, she couldn't have told him to save her. So it had to always happen. It was meant to be, I guess. I try not to get too much into like the time travel shit because it's like it is what it is. But I like to point that kind of shit out.
Yeah, I mean the time travel stuff, like it doesn't really, like if you look into it more and more, like it doesn't make sense. It's kind of like it brings up the questions like, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg, you know, something like that. You know, I mean, we don't really know. We just know it is what it is, you know.
Yes. And to the people listening, I would like to say, like, if shit like this bothers you, like there's a guy biting his finger off and using it as a bullet, just suspend your belief. Continue to suspend your belief. Like we've already gone so far.
I just really hope that they don't like dive into the whole loop, time loop, or the whole thing too much, because that's when it starts breaking down usually for anime, you know.
Yeah, it happened and let's just move on. Don't explain it. That'll be better for the story, I think. I agree with you. So I want to talk about some of the other things. So after like the saloon woman pretty much betrayed them, Andy gives her the option. So, hey, if you pour some Anheuser-Busch on their graves every year, you know what? I'm sure they'll be okay. You know, they'll forgive you. And later, Andy says to Fuko, this version of Andy says to Fuko, I just wanted her to suffer. You think that's actually true?
I mean, it could be. I mean, that, you know.
Is that something he would do, though? Like, it seems out of character. He's a different man in this, but it still seems out of character to me that he would actually mean that.
It seems like he's trying to act bad. I think that he may be somewhat of the same man, you know, is some of his values. But I feel like until Fuko met him, maybe after Fuko met him, he changed into the direct man that he is now. But I feel like that him wanting them to suffer could have been like his current self, because he is sad about his friends, you know, having to leave him again due to her betrayal. And that her pouring beer out on their graves every year not only, like, I guess, makes their memories live on somewhat, but it also brings her back to, like, this is what I did each year. So
true. Okay. I thought it was more to... I thought he was just putting up a front for Fuko, is what I thought. I thought like maybe like he just wanted his friends to be remembered.
Yeah,
like just pay your, you know, like you killed them, and the least you could do is like just pay your respects every year because they didn't deserve this. Yeah. Instead of out of spite, it was out of respect for the people he had met. Because I mean, we don't even know if he's like used to people dying like this yet, because it's been like a year since his like first memory, quote unquote.
Oh, so
this could have happened already. Yeah. Because she came back in 1965. Okay. So yeah, he's very different. He doesn't smile. I think just under the surface, he's the same guy. Okay. He just needs to let that personality out. You know what I'm saying? He's still figuring out who he is. But yeah, the last conversation that we see Fuko and Andy, they're talking about what it means to die. And we inadvertently get a love confession out of Fuko. Usually, you know, this is, you're not the person, the version of the person that I love. And it was pretty cool. But Andy says that you die when your brain stops thinking, leaving you unable to change anymore. And Fuko counters that and says, you die when everyone has forgotten about you. I like to stay away from the morbid things too, but I thought this was a really cool moment. I know I agree more with Fuko that you can live on as long as somebody says your name every once in a while. I'm a little superstitious. Yeah. But I don't know about you. I thought that was a really cool moment, though.
It was pretty cool. I mean, and I get what they're both saying, you know. I mean, technically, for those people that do die, that is when they do die. But for everyone else, they really don't die until you stop, you know, talking about them. So I think both is true in my eyes. You know what I mean?
Okay. Okay. So that's fair. That's yeah. fair. I'm gonna keep whispering people's names, but yeah, that's fair.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that you should definitely like talk about, you know, people who have passed on, especially if you care for them, you know, I mean, they would probably want you to, right?
Heck yeah, so, man. For yeah. sure. Like for real, for sure. But yeah, as, and then we start to see, as they're finishing up this conversation, we start to see Fuko being transported away to somewhere else. We're not sure at this point, but she tells Andy that he has to save her at Shinjuku station, 144 years in the future, and that she will kiss him then. Now, Tyler, I think you already kind of addressed this with, like, you think that's the reason he actually showed up there?
I think so. I mean,
passing by.
What's the coincidences, you know, of him showing up there? I mean, so if you go back, and I remember this because I'm just stupid like that, mm-hmm. but if you go back and watch the first episode, Andy was sitting there eating some ramen or pudding or something. He was just sitting there eating, right. And that's when he noticed her. So he was there for a reason, just chilling there. And I think this is why. It makes sense now, right?
It does. And like, as you were talking about that, like, he always was like, yeah, Fuko, you do love me. You know, you okay. do. So yeah, he's been saying that since the beginning. Now that I think about it. Yeah.
So, I mean, with us seeing this perspective, like, it almost makes me want to go back and rewatch it and see what they've thrown in there for us. You know,
true.
In anticipation of this episode.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I might go back and try to rewatch the beginning of the season. And we don't know if Andy's just like super comfortable with everybody or if it's just because he knew Fuko and traveled with her for a year of his life, quote unquote. But yeah, I'm gonna have to go back and check that out.
It's definitely worth a look because if they threw little stuff in there and we just didn't really think about or pay attention to it, like, that's super cool when anime do that, but
that's fun.
We just didn't know, so.
Right. But, yeah. And they could have been, you know, flaunting it in our face the whole time.
Exactly.
But yeah, the episode ends with Fuko fading off, and she ends up going to the date that Andy's memory starts. I believe it's April 9th of the 4th, 1865. And we're going to learn a lot next episode, but that's it for right now, guys.
Yeah. Washington, D.C., too, by the way.
Yeah. Should be extra spicy.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But if that's it, I guess we can move on to Frieren.
Yes, sir.
So we got Frieren episode 25, A Fatal Vulnerability. I almost can't say that word. But we learn about Frieren's embarrassing weakness. But even knowing this, can Fern really win against Frieren the Slayer, who has killed countless other mages that thought that they was better than her?
Right.
But to begin this episode, Mr. Dunstay, I think that's how you pronounce that, arrives and tells what happens to Edel and Mr. Blay. Which is critical information since it proves that the replicas don't have minds. And also, it's good to know that they're expert in, mind. I don't even know what you call that, but the expert in the mind.
I think it's like in hypnosis and things like that.
Is gone now. She's out of the dungeon, so. But then we move on to, like, right after that, we get Kane and Laureen arriving on the scene, coming in with some information. And apparently, Laureen's brother had been in the dungeon and knows that the replicas will start to gather where they are at. And what do you think about that whole thing? Do you think that all of them showing up with both sides showing up with critical information was like a coincidence? Or like, do you think that,
I think this show has done such a good job of like flowing naturally the entire length of this show so far, which, I mean, it's 25 episodes. They've done a great job. I think we all know that at this point. But when something like this happens, like, okay, Mr. Dunstay like comes in and gives him a piece of information they've been looking for. And then Lawine comes in minutes later and like gives them something else so they can overcome it. It seems too convenient. And like, maybe if they would have separated it by a couple of episodes, I'd have been like, okay, like this is more acceptable. But like for them to do it twice within 5 minutes in one episode, I thought was like a little, seemed lazy. It seemed lazy.
I feel like that it would have been, I feel like it would have been more dramatic if like Lawine and Kane showed up after the fight had already began and gave that information to Dinkin, and then he had to reroute the plan to protect Furin and Fern, right?
Right. Like it would have been, there's just like so many more fun ways they could have done it.
Yeah.
Instead of them just like stumbling in.
I mean, I understand like them meeting up down there at the bottom, because I mean, that's where they have to go, right? But the timing is what could have been better, I think, to make it more dramatic.
Right. They could have done it my way, which is more boring than your way, but I think still better than what they did.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
But it's I don't know. And the thing is I think Lawine and Kane, they explained why that they didn't share this information before. They said that they felt like it wasn't the correct time. They felt like that they couldn't do it at the time when at the beginning when Dinkin was trying to get everyone to group up. Mm-hmm. And apparently it seemed like they wanted to work with Furin and Fern, but apparently they like run off into the dungeon before that they could link up, which is kind of weird because Furin and Fern was like one of the last three groups out there besides Dinkin and Lorene and Fern and Furin. Like that's right. All that was out there at the end, and Furin and Fern left. So
the only thing that's like saving them for that explanation is one, Lorene was like, I don't trust Richter because he's an asshole, which he is. He's an asshole. and then two, they fight all the time. So Fern and, you know, the rest of the group, Fern and Sense could have walked in while they were just sitting there fighting each other.
Exactly.
So that's an easy way out. I can explain that away.
I can't really remember like what they was doing. I think it showed like a pan of them,
mm-hmm.
As Furin and Fern was walking in, but I can't remember if like they was arguing or not paying attention or what. So
I'm sure they were. They're very inexperienced and they're always beating on each other. Great friends.
Yeah. Speaking of what Bass said, Lawine mentioned that she didn't like Richter, which is fair enough, and that he was the type to abandon people if there are no rules against it. And that's one of the reasons why she didn't like join up with Dinkin and them in the beginning. And do you think that that was the right call back then, looking like right now?
I think so. And I think what Lawine said is true. Because Richter, he got mad about being called old and not saying he's like a backstabbing prick. Out of the two things, even if it did hurt to get called old to your face, like, wouldn't you be like, yo, I'm not a backstabbing prick and I'm not old? And instead of being like, hey, I'm not gonna deny I'm an asshole, but I'm not old yet. So yeah, he definitely would do that. He's not a good guy.
Yeah, I mean, kudos to them. I mean, they was able to I don't know how they made it that far. I guess because of that information, they knew what to look out for, maybe. I'm not sure. I still don't think that they could 1v1 each other. So,
and the fact that he was like itching to kill them.
Yeah.
To win, to get, to become a first class mage. He was itching.
Yeah.
Dinkin was like, yo, chill. Like, you really don't have to do this, man. It's not necessary. It's like, nah, I'm going to kill him, though.
But then the next thing that happens is, you know, they go on to create a plan of fighting the Furin after they figure out that mind games won't work. And Fern asks Furin to line up on the wall, and she attacks her with a magic spell, to demonstrate what her vulnerability is. And apparently she stops detecting mana right before she casts a spell. Something only rookie mages do, because that's one of the first things you learn how to, I guess, stop doing, I guess. And what was going in through my mind at this time is that I don't think that was very smart of Fern to reveal that, something that huge, in front of almost everybody, right?
Right.
So.
Yeah, I thought, so like last week when we spoke on the podcast, you were like, yeah, Fern isn't jealous. She just doesn't want Furin explaining how she's weak and getting examined by other people. Now we know that she was just jealous, because she's out here spilling the beans, boy.
I was giving her more credit than she deserved, apparently. So.
She's just jealous, though. They're assassinating her character the last 4 or 5 episodes. But yeah, like so Dinkin said something interesting. He was like, even with us knowing that, a lot of us would probably still die. So yeah. I think it's one thing knowing it and another thing actually taking advantage of it.
Yeah, I think they even went on to say, like, you would have to be a very, very high level mage to even take advantage of that knowledge or something like that.
So. And these are the people that are taking the first class mage exam. So, like, there's not many people that even could do anything with that knowledge.
And I feel like even with that knowledge, you would have to have a couple of high class mages, one to distract, kind of like what they're doing with Clayron, right? And then one to actually do its thing like Fern is doing. So it would definitely take a lot. And I thought it was funny, they asked her why she never like learned it or whatever, and she was like, her reasoning was, I was just too embarrassed, basically. And I was dying. Why she didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, I'm too embarrassed.
Like, I feel like her years alive, she could have fixed that, right?
I just don't think she gives a shit. Like, I don't think she, like, really likes to fight. So she said she didn't tell them because she was embarrassed. She didn't tell us why she didn't fix it. Okay. And like, that's like a real thing to do. It's like, yeah, I got the keys, but like, I really don't want to come up off this right now. Like, I don't want people to know this about me. I think it's really cool that like, it, even knowing it's not that big of a weakness, because you have to have somebody as least as talented as Furin to distract her. And then you have to have somebody quick as Fern with spells to actually hit her. And we know just from watching the show this season, like, there's not many people as quick as Fern as getting off spells. So.
And I also like the fact that they went into the whole Zoltrak thing and how, like, for people like Fern, it was like, you know, just second nature to do those things to defend against Zoltrak and these magics. And whereas for someone like Furin, who is an elf and been around for much longer, she's not always known that. And she says it takes like a second or two to actually, I guess, figure out, you know, what to do in those situations, to think about it, basically, essentially. And I thought that was pretty neat to for Furin to talk about herself in that way. So,
yeah. And I think that's part of the reason why Furin has her only use Zoltraq in battle. Because yeah. She's like, if it gives me problems, like, and no one else uses it, like, they're not going to be able to defend it rapid fire either.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she's kind of teaching her in a way that she could be more powerful than her. I think it's pretty cool.
True. And what would an episode of Furin be without a little bit of a flashback to the Heroes Party?
Always.
Basically just solving dungeons. And then it's actually revealed that she kind of bragged about it, that she was the mage that has cleared the most dungeons in history, I guess, with Himmel and them. And plus, probably on her own after Himmel passed away. So,
yeah, she genuinely seems to enjoy it. And also, she has to find all of those rare grimoires.
Yeah.
So I'm sure she wanders into dungeons by herself all the time. Yeah.
Those rare grimoires and the mimics.
Yeah, them damn mimics, bro.
But yeah, I thought that was pretty neat. And we actually get to see Furin and Fern start fighting the Clairin. And there's some pretty flashy spells going on. And I want to know, like, did this battle live up to what you was thinking?
I wanted it to be longer. But the flashiness, I've been waiting for this since the beginning of this. Since we figured out that Fern is like Fern the fucking Slayer. I think like episode 9 or 10. Like, I've been waiting on some flash. Been waiting on some pizzazz, some razzle dazzle. And we finally got a little bit of it. Although it didn't last long enough for me.
Yeah, I thought that it looked really good. I thought they'd done a really good job at the short amount of time that we actually got. And like I was saying, me and Bass was discussing this before, you know, Clairin isn't defeated just yet. I mean, we know it's going to happen, but sure. We did not see the final blow on this episode. So
she's clapped.
We cannot count Furin of any nature out of the fight until they're dead.
She's clapped, bro.
I think it's too easy.
We saw a smirk from Furin, an attack from Fern, and then it cut. Did it cut to the credits or cut to the flashback? One of the two. She's toast. It's over.
It's going to be so fun if we come back and like Clairin dodges the Zoltraq or something and they have to like recoup, I guess, and figure out redo that strategy somewhat. So
imagine how screwed they would be.
I don't think they would be. I think that Fern might panic a little bit, but I think they could handle it still, but it would give a little bit more, you know.
Panic because, a little bit.
Because
panic thing, a little panic a little bit.
What makes me think that it's not over yet is for one, we didn't see it, right? And two, the biggest part of their plan was countering all the other clay fake perfect images that are supposed to meet up with Dinkin and them, right? And we haven't seen that yet. So I think that we need more time. And I think that we're not going to see the end of the battle next week. I think we're going to see outside of them doors next week.
Really? You know what? This is not like a battle anime at all. The fights are normally very short and they ended less than an episode. No matter how big or pivotal the fight is so far. So I think that's why I think it's over. I even think that they're not even going to show the battles with the other, the other clays. It just doesn't come off as that kind of show to me. It's more like an adventure, Lord of the Rings type beat where like the fights aren't that important.
Yeah, I kind of agree. But then again, like we seen since, right? And we seen the fake, you know, images since, and we haven't even seen Fern yet, and the fake Fern. So, like, I feel like that we have to see them converge on the bottom of the steps, right? The bottom of the dungeon where Dinkin and them is gathered.
I think it's, if a lot of those clay, like they said, like I think they're going to get out of there before most of those clay people show up. I think they're going to have to fight a couple or two. Like I said, I think it could be off screen, but if they show a little bit of it, I wouldn't be surprised. But I don't think we're going to see Clayfern, or I don't think we're going to see Sense. Like, that'd be too much of a problem.
Okay.
Like, Sense is, like, super strong. I think, you know, that's a Furin job, and if she's fighting other Furin, like, she's not defeated, they're getting washed. They're absolutely getting washed, dude.
Maybe I just want to see Dinkin, you know, roll up his sleeves again.
And, like, and another reason why I think that we won't see Sense fight again is because she has such a great advantage. Because they talked about not many people's magic being set up for being in a dungeon because it uses natural things that are already there.
Okay.
I guess Sense can just use her fucking hair. But hey, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see in a few days here, and I'll call you.
But the last thing that happened basically in this episode, we get to actually see the last time Ciri and Furin actually met, and it was when she took Flame's will to Ciri, and Flame basically was asking Ciri to train all the Imperial mages, and she kind of got pissed off and tore up the will. And like, what'd you think about all that? Like, do you think there's any clues that Flame had started, like, the humanity studying of magic and all that good stuff?
Sorry, what was your question? I got it. Never mind. I don't think they were, like, there were, like, some hints here and there, like, how everybody was, like, oh, this is Flame's memoir, grimoire, or, like, something like that. And there's so many fake ones. She could have either been legendary, I guess, where she is legendary, and we know that for a fact now. She started humanity using magic on a wide scale. Her also being touted as, like, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, mage of all time. That makes sense, but, like, yeah, there's no way we could have known that, like, she actually started this whole shit with humans, which is really cool.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, like, it just... Yeah, like, what I didn't really understand is, with all that, is why Sense was so, or Ciri, why Ciri was so mad about her dreams and her wanting to do this for the human kinds, right?
Because she wanted magic just to be special.
Okay.
And, like, for only truly talented people to, like, be able to use magic. Because her main thing about not taking over for Flame is, like, I don't want to teach people that suck.
she said this.
I don't want to teach people that are not talented. Like, fuck that. Like, these people suck. And I guess she figured it was boring. She said it was boring, too. Like, yeah, if everybody can use magic, like, it's not that special then. So she wanted to hoard all the knowledge. For herself, it seems, which is like a reverse of what she's doing now, because like she's gifting any spell to anybody that comes one spell to any person that becomes a first class mage. And like, why do you think she would like start doing that after being like, yeah, I'm not gonna teach anybody shit?
Maybe it's to incentivize like these special mages, right? Because only that's what she. That's the ones that she was really for, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only ones that deserve to use magic in her mind. So, I mean, that would make sense. Like, she's rewarding them because they're so good, I guess, right?
So, yeah, like, if you have talent, she'll be like, you know, here's a little something extra.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, you're better than all these like dumbass weaklings over here. Right?
I guess you're decent. I guess you're decent.
You ain't no Flame or me, but you're all right. So.
It was also crazy how she was like, I trained Flame on a whim. It seemed like she did not respect Flame at all.
I think that she was just saying that though. I think she's putting on a front somewhere. I think that she grew close to Flame, and she's just trying to act like an elf, right?
That's true. Yeah, like, so. She doesn't feel attached to her because, like, she pretty much was here today, going tomorrow in elf time.
Because if she really truly felt that way, I don't think she would have got as mad as she did at her will.
True. She wouldn't have cared.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah, that's fair.
But to end this episode, Siri actually gave us some clues about the elf lifespan, saying that they could delay decisions for 100 years, calling a millennium mirror, and saying they exist closer to an eternity. And this kind of blew my mind, because like the whole conversation between Furin and Siri, like we don't even, I can't even begin to like that fathom, like how much time in between and how much time has passed, and like how old are they really, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, like the fact that she's calling somebody, okay, like she was like, yeah, in a mere millennium, humans are going to be good at magic. And like, it's crazy. So like, it's been, we knew it was at least 1,000 years since Flamme died, but the fact that they're calling a millennium mere, they yeah. wouldn't, that's not like a fifth of their lifetime. So like, I think they lived to it like at least 10,000 years old.
I think maybe more, probably.
Yeah, because they both still look dummy young. They look like little kids.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's maybe one day we'll actually get to figure out, like, what the, like, range is, honestly. Because they keep hinting around it. So,
true.
Maybe we'll actually get to know.
And I wonder, like, if most of them just, like, end up getting killed before they die of natural causes. Because I feel like that is way higher chance of that happening.
Probably.
If you live that long.
We know that there ain't many elves around nowadays because true. Of like demons targeting them, I guess. So, and it's also, speaking of that, it's also like a fun thing that they actually brought up that I think Siri told Furin that a human mage would be the likely cause of her death. And I thought that a human mage or the demon king would be the most likely cause for her death. I thought that was really interesting coming from Siri.
I think it's just like, it's hard for them to die by natural causes. Like I just said, like,
yeah,
the longer you live, the higher chance that an accident's going to happen.
Yeah.
So say you live for 10,000 years. Yeah, there's 10,000 years versus 100. Okay, like 100 years, like you can go. Pretty, you know, you can go that long without somebody like accidentally killing you, getting hit by something, falling on your head. But 10,000 years recorded human history, yeah, you'd probably have an accident and die.
That's a lot of dice rolls, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, we don't think about it every time, like, we wake up, it's nothing but dice rolls until we go back to bed again. Yeah,
it's wild to put it like that, but I mean, I think that's how it is, right?
It really is, man, it really is.
But yeah, that's about it from Furin. We got a pretty good banger of an episode, and
that was like, great.
Next week, like we're saying, like it's kind of a toss up on how this goes next week. We don't really know where it's going right now. So
yeah, I gotta say, like we're watching some really good anime.
We are
this season, man. I thought this was gonna be like a down season for us after last season, with JJK and Rurouni Kenshin and whatnot.
Three holy, more episodes, too.
Holy crap. This is, I mean, I think Furin just has blown our mind.
Yeah.
Glad we put it on here. Good God.
So, like, we're literally wrapping up, like, this season with these final episodes. We got three more episodes left.
Yep.
And, like, I guess the season, the first season ends after the first class mage exams. If I would take a stab at it.
That makes sense.
It's what it's timing out to be for me, so.
Yeah, I don't think they would, like, leave us in the middle of the...
Yeah, so.
Or maybe, like, the very end, like a cliffhanger. But like, just give me some conclusion. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
But next, guys, we have Mashal, Magic and Muscles, Season 2, Episode 8, Mash, Burn Dead, and the Tall Tower. So, Mash has just defeated Marguerite Macron. But Innocent Zero has shown up with some pretty ill intentions, I must say. So hopefully Wahlberg and the Divine Visionaries have enough power to hold him and his cronies, bitch motherfuckers they are, off. So we return to this anime with Wahlberg actually confronting Innocent Zero as he tries to absorb MASH. Now, still not entirely sure what he means by like take my son back, or I don't know. So, but to ward off Innocent Zero's team, he freezes them in place. Wahlberg freezes them in place, and one of the cronies says, "Like, is that bloodthirsty? Like, or like bloodlust? Do you actually think that's the case? Like, you think Wahlberg's got that demon in him like that? Like that dog in him? The way he can stare at you with ill intent and stop you like that?"
I mean, he definitely, like, after that happened, like the little axe thing or whatever, then he like doubled down, right? And like he done like that shit like they do in like One Piece with Haki, and he just like he basically used Haki on them. I mean, that's what it reminded me of.
Have you seen Hunter x Hunter?
No. Oh, I've seen like a handful of episodes. Like I got to like the first like
were
training his arm or whatever, right? In the tower or whatever.
Yeah, did you meet Hikusa?
Yeah.
Hikusa does this shit to people with bloodlust. Yeah. Okay. That's what it made me think about was Hikusa. Like he can just stare at them and like creep people out. Like, yeah, yeah. I don't even want to fight no more.
Well, the aura thing is what made me feel like it was kind of like Haki, because like
that's true.
He just like done his little thing and like the aura spread, and then you could see like that one person was kind of more terrified, like you should have blood veins and shit. So
true, nice. True. But yeah, like it seems like Wahlberg's really about that life, and I just didn't expect this out of him, to just have straight bloodlust. Like, yeah, I will murder all of you right now, don't step. I thought the old man was chill. But Innocent Zero says that his objective is to become the perfect human. Undying, beautiful, and powerful. A little creepy, but yeah. I guess in a way, all of us want that to some degree. But Innocent Zero says he's more human than anybody for wanting it so bad, which I could honestly understand, like the dark side of being a human. Like, yeah, like if you're willing to kill people over being beautiful and powerful, yeah, like you're a terrible individual and undying, of course. But with really no talking to do, Wahlberg and Innocent Zero, Big Boy IZ, they start their battle by summoning their respective gods because they're both three-liners. So Wahlberg has Uranus, and IZ, Innocent Zero, has Kronos. And I believe Kronos is Hades, right? He's the god of the dead, Kronos.
I'm not real sure on my alternate
Greek mythology
god names, but Kronos is the king of Titans and the god of time, right?
Oh, okay. Okay,
basically what I just googled. So
interesting.
So I guess you know, it's like god, well, I was, don't they do something like that in God of War or something like that? Kronos?
Sure. I thought Uranus was the father of the Titans.
Yeah, this is just what it's saying. Kronos was the king of the Titans and the god of time. So, he ruled the cosmos during the Golden Age after castrating and deposing his father, Uranus.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay. So that may give us some clues about what's about to happen. because the backtrack a little bit.
Which one has which?
Wahlberg has Uranus, which is the original king of the Titans, the god of the Titans. Okay. And then Kronos is like the usurper, and Uranus' son.
So you think that they're going to play it out like history, and Kronos is going to defeat Uranus, which is
Zero defeating
Wahlberg, right?
Yeah, that would make the most sense to me. But we'll see how they stick to it. They might have just named them that because they're rivals overall in Greek mythology. But yeah, Innocent Zero ended up summoning some demons to destroy like the students to make Wahlberg like protect everybody. Smart move. I like the strats. Devious, but I like it. But Wahlberg ends up countering the time stop, and I'm gonna say wake up. unfreeze some like students in the Divine Visionaries, including Mash, Lance, Dot, Margaret.
Uses hockey.
Get out of here. Get the fuck out of here, dude. Order Model and Calgo Guiana. Notice that he did not unfreeze Finn because Finn's a bitch. and Lemon's too precious. And the crew is dealing with these demons pretty easily, but Orter ends up saying that the demons are comparable to two-liners. Bro, does that make any sense to you? They power, everybody power scaling the two-liners now? Like, when did that happen?
Yeah, I'm not real sure. I mean, it doesn't seem like, so the demons are the things that are coming out of the ground from Innocent Zero's magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
They did not seem like two-liner worthy, right? They didn't. They seem like they was pretty basic bots or whatever.
That's what it seemed like. They were just like a horde. Yeah, but Orta said like they have enough. I guess that they have enough magic to be two-liners, but they're not skilled.
But we literally don't see them like use magic, right? I didn't see them use magic.
Yeah, but Orta definitely said that. He definitely said that.
Yeah, so I just don't know what they're thinking. Like, it seems like right now all they are doing are rushing towards people. And that's about it. So,
yeah. So I thought it was interesting that they said that, but even more interesting that somebody wrote that.
Yeah.
And had them has people like Dot scale to two ladders now. At least I don't really know what. Maybe it's a skill portion too. So
yeah, Dot, who can only use Expom, you know. So I don't know.
Hey, man, he got heart though. So next we see Wahlberg actually teleport Innocent Zero and himself to what seems like a place in the sky where Wahlberg says, our fight won't get interrupted up here. And bro, the first thing I thought when he said that is like, you just took yourself to your death, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, you ain't got Mash to help you now. Nah. I feel like Mash is like the key to this and you just separated yourself between everybody, so...
Yeah, I mean, Wahlberg, one, has to feel very confident in himself to be like, okay, let's 1v1 this, even though I have all the support I need around me. So, but I guess he's just trying to keep everybody safe, but like, that's some shit people say in shows before they die.
Yeah, it gives me like Yamamoto vibes, bro. Right?
It does. There's just like certain things people say. Like, I don't know, we were watching last season. It was like, I have to get home to my wife or some shit like that. It's like, you're dead. Like, you're done. I got a girl waiting for me back home. I got a whole family. Like, you're dead. Like, it's over. I'll be right back and then some crazy shit's going on. You're dead. Like, this is just one of those things to me.
Yeah, I mean, and that makes sense with what we just, you know, figured out about Uranus and Kronos or whatever. So, it's kind of adding up, bro.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some issues going on. But it would be so catastrophic for, like, the magic realm because, like, this is the only person that can fight Innocent Zero.
Yeah, that we know of, and, like, it's Mash's biggest ally, so.
Right, so hopefully he doesn't take the permanent L, can come back from this or get his get back. But I definitely don't see him winning this fight one way or the other.
So
Mash ends up leaving the stadium to take on Cell War, but he had forgotten who Cell War was, and I'm gonna tell you a secret, Tyler. I did too. I had no idea who that was.
I don't think it's very much of a secret because it's same for me. So I did not remember until I guess they made me remember. So
I didn't remember till they said his name, Cell War.
You know, and honestly, after we figured out who it was, did we not, like, when we was actually covering Mashal last year, did we not think that Cell War was actually Innocent Zero?
We did.
Yeah, we did. So
yeah.
It's pretty interesting to think back and see that, and I just happen to remember that. I was pretty sure that we thought that Cell War was Innocent Zero, so. but yeah, we was wrong.
And we only thought that for like an episode because we saw Innocent Zero or like something happened and we realized it wasn't him pretty quickly.
Well, I thought that was like the end. I thought that was like the ending episode. Oh yeah, or
it was a few episodes. Yeah, that we thought he was Innocent Zero. So it's interesting that both me and you did not remember him even being on the show. Incredible, incredible.
But to give us credit, this has been a year ago.
It's true.
And based on like that little thing that I created, like the anime DJs watch list or whatever, we watched like 60 plus series and shows last year, so just for the podcast alone. So
that's crazy.
Yeah,
that's so freaking nuts.
We watch just for the podcast, we watch a shit ton of content, so there's a thousand wonders we even know who MASH is at this point, so
so give us our credit, please. But yeah, like it was interesting getting reintroduced to Soul War. And going back to the fight that's happening in the stadium, I thought this is one of those episodes for me with MASH. It's like, this is like a MASH episode. Like, we're getting cool fights. We're getting like a lot of comedy in between the seriousness.
Stupid shit.
Oh, just dumb shit. Like, Dot ends up getting turned into a baby by somebody named Sitter Baby.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Come on, bro. And he's running around like a baby. Like, it's great.
So the whole time I was watching this, I just watched this like an hour ago or something like that. And the whole time I was watching it, I was like, I wonder what Bass thinks about this shit, about this baby shit. So what did you think about this baby shit, bro?
I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was so entertaining. I felt like this episode went by so quickly. I really enjoyed it. But like, my favorite part of it was like Lance and Dot interacting with each other. In baby form. I was like, I can't understand him, but I know he's pissed off at me.
Yeah, because all he was doing was like, bo, 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 bo.
Yeah. But they were like still communicating, and I thought it was hilarious. Because like you could tell like if a baby, like you can tell what's going on with a baby without them saying anything if they can't quite talk yet.
Yeah, I think that the baby part was probably my favorite part of the episode, and maybe like my favorite part of like episode in the last few episodes. Like, it just shit, like, this is what MASH is, you know, for me. Like, this is what I like about MASH.
Yes,
like the fights aren't very serious, but you know, they was trying to make them serious, but not serious. And you know, I wish that they would just go back to this if they're going to do it, you know?
Yeah, I like the change up. I like to know when it's not coming because they don't do it every single fight.
Yeah.
Like the one with whatever the other three-liner with the freaking, no, maybe the two-liner with like the wand where he couldn't hit, you couldn't hit him.
You're talking about the dude with the god behind him or whatever?
Yeah, I just can't remember his name. Carpaccio. Yeah. Oh, Carpy Boy.
Cappuccino, I got it.
Yeah. I thought like that was a good time to have a super serious fight. But this is like, okay, this is a fight within a fight. Some good comic relief, like where everywhere else all this shit is going down. And then you had MASH not remembering who Soul War was, and it was like looking around like, oh, I'm embarrassed, like that I don't know who you are, but I'm still here to kick your ass. Like, it's fun.
And then he imagined him with as a cream puff as a head.
He was not listening to that man at all.
But one of the things I took out of this, out of the baby situation, was the fact that Lance, I believe it was Lance, right? That got turned into a baby as well.
Yeah, Lance and Dot, yeah.
Yeah, and so Dot wasn't able to use his Explode, but Lance was able to use his Graviole. And I thought that was a really cool way of showing the power difference between Dot and Lance. So,
well, I don't think it was more of a power. Well, there is a power difference. Like, well, let's not kid ourselves. But. But how their magic works, I think, is the bigger deal. because okay. 1/10 of, like, it's less than 1/10 of dots explode or whatever. It's just smoke, right? It's nothing. But Lance can use 1/10 of graviola and just apply it to a smaller area, and it's the same strength.
See, I thought that when they were saying 1/10, I thought they meant 1/10 of their powers. I thought that's what they said.
Yeah, 1/10 of their powers. Yeah.
So 1/10 of Dot's powers would be equal to nothing, right? And 1/10 of Lance's powers is equal to still getting shit done. I took it.
I guess how I'm taking it is like the way that Dot's power works. Okay, like you could have like a hand grenade, right?
Yeah.
10% of a hand grenade is like a little firework that you throw on the ground. It's not exactly 10%, but you get what I'm saying, right? Like, like it's just something that makes a sound and a puff of smoke.
Yeah, what is them, like the black cats or whatever the hell they are? I'm not sure.
Yeah. And then, but graviole's graviole now, no matter how small it is.
Okay.
That's how I took it.
Okay. I see what you're saying. So.
But yeah, like he has a better power overall. And is stronger. He is stronger still. But so next we got a good piece of lore towards the end of this episode that Wahlberg and Innocent Zero were trained by the same person. Adam, who shaped the magical realm and became the foundation for the divine visionaries, whatever the fuck that means. don't know how he's the foundation of the I believe like maybe the founder created it. Or is the basis of all of this. But we see Wahlberg and Innocent Zero going at it. This is fucking dope. They like have magic staffs. They said, fuck the wands. we're too big for that. But then Innocent Zero does a forbidden spell. And pretty much looks like he's Edo Tensei-ing somebody. And it probably is going to be Adam, by the way, Wahlberg reacted to it. You think the same or?
Yeah, I mean, that would be kind of wild. When they was talking about Adam, did it not seem like they was kind of making him out to be like a dark type figure?
Yeah, they said his dark magic was unrivaled.
Yeah, so it kind of seemed like they was making him out to be sort of a villain type, kind of roughly. But then they said something about, you know, him being the foundation of divine visionaries. And I'm just like there, I don't know. It just kind of confused me there. But it would be really fun if he did bring Adam back out to fight, and then they pull some mass shit, and Adam actually like doesn't really help Innocent Zero, right?
Yeah. Okay. That'd be fun. But yeah, I don't think it's worth pulling anybody. I don't think it's worth Edo Tensei-ing anybody else, because they're the only two on their level.
Yeah, I mean, that we know of.
So. That we know of, but like, everybody's scared of Innocent Zero, and everybody's scared of fucking Wahlberg, so. But yeah, that we know of. So we'll see who's really in the coffin. But Wahlberg definitely seemed very taken aback by the whole situation, calling it a forbidden spell. It just screams Edo Tensei to me. And for the people that haven't seen Naruto, this is, it's a jutsu where you bring people back from the dead, pretty much. Yeah. Sorry about not giving y'all context on that. But yeah, the episode ends after Master kind of quickly defeats Cell War by running on his carbine and punching him in the face. And Mash was feeling himself this episode. He's like, you know what? I've already seen this. I'm like, you're going to show me the same thing twice, bro. Get out of here. He literally goes, please.
Yeah.
He was on one, and I appreciate that. I really do.
Yeah, I really like that. He was like, I think Cream Puff Head, whatever it is, Cell War, he was like, you know, this did not go the same way last time we met. And Mash was just like, yeah, I've already seen this shit, bro. I'm not falling for it again, bro. I'm not some idiot, basically.
Which Mash is a fucking idiot.
Yeah, it's
been long been established at this point. They even made him dumber this season, so.
You think so?
Absolutely. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I agree. So I just think it's funny.
That's it for Mashal for me.
All righty. Let's move on to One Piece. 1096. A forbidden piece of history. A theory concerning a kingdom. And basically, after Vegapunk Shaka stops S-Shark from attacking the Straw Hats, he tells them a theory about a kingdom and a 100-year void. And we finally get to meet the real Dr. Vegapunk. And first off, like, me and Bass was having a discussion last week about what Shaka really meant when he was talking about the kingdom from 900 years ago. And it turns out that it was actually what I was kind of talking about there, that there was actually another island that he had found or that he had known of from 900 years ago. So I thought that was pretty I didn't really know for sure, even though I read the manga, like this kind of stuff doesn't really stick with me, I guess.
Right. That's very specific. Yeah. That's wording. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was kind of like a toss up between me and Bass at that point about what we both perceived it as, I guess. So it's good for them to clarify that, because we sure didn't really 100% know what was really going on. So
no, definitely did not 100% understand what was going on. But yeah, I think it's cool that like we're actually getting some more of this 100-year dark void period. Like,
yes.
This is the stuff I really like. Of course, I like the fighting and Luffy, like Gear 5 and shit like that. That's cool. But Oda has laid out so many of these, like, breadcrumbs. And I've been watching this show so long that, like, some of this stuff is starting to come to a head, or it's coming back. And, like, we actually get to talk about it again and learn more. Like, this is what I'm here for. Like, this is a journey. Like, this is an epic story to me.
Yeah. And it's fun to see that, just like you said. And Shaka's theory is that 900 years ago, the 20 kingdoms joined up and defeated an advanced kingdom, not Egghead, the kingdom that Shaka was referring to, that they have not been able to meet the same standards of that kingdom yet. And then after that, they basically created the world government and erased that kingdom from history. And that is what we call the Void Century, because they basically erased everything in that 100-year span from history. And it is forbidden knowledge now, is basically what he was telling the Straw Hats. And this is one of the reasons why Ohara was destroyed. Because Dr. Clover gained the knowledge, he put it together and figured out kind of what was going on in the Void Century and the Advanced Kingdom and all that stuff. And for y'all that don't know, Ohara is, you know, Robin's birthplace. It's the Land of the Scholars or the Island of Scholars?
Mm-hmm. Or what? The Island of Scholars, yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, what are your thoughts on Shaka's theory?
I think it makes sense, but just because he's calling it a theory, I think there's parts that are not correct. I don't see why they would give us all this information right now and still call it a theory. So I think most of it's probably true. I think that the kingdom was erased. Like we've heard Dr. Clover say that before. Hundreds and hundreds of chapters ago, or episodes ago. But I think maybe like the specifics about what happened, they were defeated by the other 20 or something like that. Like some of that more detailed stuff could be wrong.
Yeah. Because they don't really know about it like Dr. Clover did. And he was just barely, I think, grasping, at what it actually was. And they barely got like so many percentages of what he was grasping at, right?
Right, right.
Because like a good proportion of it was obviously destroyed in the Ohara Buster Call. So
exactly.
So we don't really know. We just know some of it, and I guess they're kind of piecing it together, and you know, stuff like that. So I guess that's kind of why it's a theory. And Dr. Clover also thought that the world government was more afraid of the ideology of this past civilization. And like, what do you think that could be? Like, could it be related to Luffy's dream, or like Luffy and like the pirates in general?
I think it's almost 100% that it's like, that's part of Luffy's dream, whatever the ideology is, or whatever the civilization was like. Because I think Luffy's dream is so ridiculous that that's why people laugh when they hear it, or his crew laugh when they heard it. It's like, that's it. That's really it.
Yeah.
And I think it has something like about being free, and like everybody's completely free, in some way, shape, or form. Yeah, there's just got to be some shit behind that for it to have like this big of an impact for this long of a story. But I think it has something to do with that.
Yeah, I think so too. I do think it has some stupid thing that only Luffy could cook up about freedom, you know, from the government or whatever, because the government is crooked that we know mm-hmm. of. So, because I guess the Celestial Dragons they are wrong mostly. So,
yeah.
But it's definitely like, I don't know. It's fun to see all this like coming around and talking about it again, because these are the gray areas, and I feel like we're on the verge of knowing kind of what Oda's cooking up, and then so much stuff is going to make sense from the past, right?
Yes. So. Yeah, like I was saying, like we have all these puzzle pieces, and like I'm patient. Obviously, I'm patient. We're almost 1,100 episodes, but like I think everybody's like this. At least this anime only like is ready for like some of the pieces to fall together.
Yeah, and I will say that like the ideals of a civilization that far advanced or whatever, and I guess strong enough to almost take on 20 kingdoms mm-hmm. or whatever. Like that, the ideology behind that has to be scary for the world government now. So they would want to keep that under wraps too. And I think their ideology is somewhat similar to Luffy's. That's why they're having such a strong reaction to Luffy, especially in his new gear state. So,
exactly.
But we, you know, speaking of like what we've seen on Ohara, we actually get to see that some of the books of the Ohara library was saved by being thrown in the lake, and the Dragon and the Revolutionary Army was the ones that actually pulled up on the island after all that happened and found the books right about the same time that Vegapunk actually pulled up on the island. That's pretty interesting, right?
I thought that was pretty cool that we got some like interaction with those two. This was huge, right? Like a lot of this episode was like, it's like 80% of it was like recap. Like we've seen Ohara get destroyed. I don't know how many times at this point, but many, many times. But it was good to get some new information out of the same old dragged out event of Ohara getting destroyed.
Yeah.
We know the books survived. I had always remembered that they were throwing them in the water, in the lake, but like, did anybody ever go get them? Did they do that? Was it futile? But now we know Dragon and the Revolutionary Army actually pulled them out of the lake. And whatever those scholars and archaeologists were looking for, and I had found, Dragon knows that now.
Which is cool. Well, most of it, probably a good percentage of it. I wonder, like, how much, like,
Dragon knows enough
water damage. Like you would think that the books like received some type of water damage, right, and was kind of unreadable. Some of it, right? So
I'm sure. Oh yeah. I'm definitely sure, but like I think Draken is going to know enough to put it together.
Yeah, because that's his whole goal, is to topple the government, I guess, because he is the leader of the Revolutionary Army. That his ideals probably line up, you know, with Luffy's and the Advanced Kingdom or whatever. If you had to guess, probably.
Yeah, so, Luffy's got freedom in his blood.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, it was fun seeing that. And Dr. Vegapunk, he was there because he wanted to pay his respects, I think, to his good friend Dr. Clover. They was good friends, IRL. So that's the reason why he was there. And he just happened to see Draken, you know, doing his thing. And I think, I don't know how many episodes ago this was, but we actually see Vegapunk talking to Draken and discussing like he thinks that he's going to die in the future or whatever Vegapunk is and all that stuff. And I was kind of wondering how that relationship got established. And now we know it actually got established, I assume, on the island of Ohara. So
yeah, that would make sense. They both come in to pay their respects for the same person. It's like, oh, like you were probably a like-minded person if you knew this guy.
Yeah.
And you're probably a truth seeker like I am if you know this guy and are willing to come here right after, you know, this place is destroyed and, you know, who would really want to come here otherwise? But yeah, I think they probably have a very strong bond at this point. So it's really cool.
Yeah.
Luffy's working towards more global ambitions and getting closer to his father. We've met Dr. Vegapunk in this episode, finally. So yeah, this it's heating up. It's heating up.
The real Dr. Vegapunk.
Yeah.
And like we actually get to see Luffy and Chopper combine. They do their little combination thing, and just basically pisses off Bonnie because they're trying to get into the big robot that they found from who knows where in the dump or whatever. And then we actually get to see, like Bass said, the real Dr. Vegapunk. And he has like an apple on the top of his head. But in the flashback of him on Ohara, he had a very tall and large head. And so like, I want to know from Bass, who hasn't like read the manga and stuff, like what is your first opinion of him and like of him on Ohara and him now on like the future island?
So he had that big ass head, that million head. And now it's an apple on the top of his head. So like he did something with that brain. Maybe that's how he split up his personalities. Like, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't really know how he controls them or like how they're still Dr. Vegapunk. But yeah, maybe he kept like his main self and like the main brain. And like he gave them bits of the brain. I don't know, because that's a lot of freaking forehead space just to like go somewhere, you know? So that's what I think. And he's a lot goofier than what I thought he'd be. I know he'd be like a little eccentric because like typically that's how they make super smart people in like different types of shows. I think like especially anime, they're like a little crazy, but the boy is wacky.
And I think that his tongue hanging down to his knees doesn't help that perception of him.
So. Oh no. Oh, definitely not. You know, his mouth dry.
Yeah. I don't understand why Oda drew him or created him to be like that. That's just Oda doing Oda shit, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, like why? I mean, why does Oda?
Yeah,
Oda so. Make anybody how he makes them? Like everybody's just so different. So many different races of people in this show.
The whole tongue thing, it just threw me off guard from the first time I seen him. Even now, like, it's just even more crazy. So
I think he's, like, trying to make him as unserious as possible.
Okay. I feel that.
Like, he's lanky. Like, he's got a long tongue that sticks out of his mouth. Like, he has an apple for the top half of his head. Like, yeah. Like, I think he's just trying to make him as ridiculous looking as possible. Okay. While being human. Like a normal human. Because we've seen Oda do some crazy shit with designs. As far as people go.
And obviously, like, I can't really get into what I think about Vegapunk too much, because this is part of the stuff that I do remember. And, you know,
Why aren't you cool?
Tragic, you know. That's why I wanted to hear from you what your first impressions of him was, because it's definitely an odd thing to see on your TV screen when you're not expecting it, you know. So
yeah, I don't think I'm ever like in shock when I'm watching One Piece anymore. Yeah, like there's people with two sets of elbows, like they're like Big Mom Cracker. Like these people made out of mochi, like you can't.
They're Looney Tunes, you know.
So. There's a lady with three eyes. Like there's so many different people. There's a guy. Yeah. They get the Lunarians. Like that. Yeah. Like you can't unfazed at this point. Unfazed. A tongue. That's not gonna do too much for me at this point.
A tongue with an apple on their head. Yeah. Okay.
He fits in. If anything.
Well, you know, that was a pretty short One Piece week, but that's about all we got. Just basically recap. You got anything else you want to add for One Piece, Bass?
That is it for me, my friend.
Alrighty. Well, that is it for our weekly rundown, episode 57. And next Thursday, we actually got a review of Ghibli movie Princess Mononoke. I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce it. So me and Bass is just going to be talking about Princess Mononoke. We love Ghibli around here, and we're excited to, like, you know, review another Ghibli film. So
yes, of course. Of course we are. So y'all come check that out. It's a great, great show.
Well, yeah. Movie. And wrap this up. Make sure y'all rate the podcast on all your listening platforms. Remember that we actually got the DJing videos usually out on YouTube within a few days or whatever of the DJing release. So make sure you go follow us over there on the YouTube and like the videos, you know, and let your friends know. Let your friends know, all your anime buddies, or even if they don't like anime, maybe put them on to us, you know. We got some episodes out there that, you know, would probably help them pick out like a, you know, anime that they want to start with or whatever. We got like the starter recommendation show out as well. And we will catch you on Thursday. Later.
Peace.